Thank you for joining us at the Roundtable.
Brought to you by Community Education Arts, a nonprofit organization based in Noblesville, Indiana.
I'm Alice Cavanaugh Scober, President of CE Arts.
And I'm Sarah E. Morin, Secretary of CE Arts. Let's sit down at the Roundtable. Everybody, to our NICE workshop number one. NICE stands for Noblesville Interdisciplinary Creativity Expo. And so each year we pick four classic books or pieces of literature, could be plays, could be poems, and then we take a deep dive into them and we invite artists of any medium to create art based on those books. And so for our workshops, we always like to do a little bit of a dive into what's the background, what's the meaning, what's the relevance for us today. This year our books are Jane Eyre by Charlotte Bronte, Gone with the Wind by, oh, why did it just slip my mind, Alice?
Margaret Mitchell. Yay!
Dracula by Bram Stoker and Little Women by Louisa May Alcott. And we do like to highlight specific quotes from each, but because we have a limited amount of time to record these workshops, we're going to be just looking into couples today. So to start with, we'll be talking about good, functional, healthy couples that we see in each of these four books. And as kind of a fun way to kick this off, Alice, you set up a social media poll. Do you want to tell us about that?
Yeah, sure. I set up quite a few social media polls because it's the first time I ever did that. So it was interesting. Before I go into the social media polls, you mentioned our passages that we select. And I should let everybody know that the passages are on our website. If you go to ceaarts.org and then find the NICE tab, you'll be able to pull down the menu and go to a page that just has the passages on it. For those of you who are interested in, or who are not interested in reading the entire books, you can just look at the passages for inspiration. But yeah, I created polls for our three categories, basically best romantic couple, I don't know how to say this, not best, but most dysfunctional couple or relationship, and then our best friend-zoned relationship. And I probably should use the word relationship because Dracula showed up in almost all of our polls, and he's not really a person. He's not a human. And some of our pairings showed up in more than one poll category, which was kind of interesting too. But for the best couple, the best functional, healthy relationship, the finalist in the social media bracketed polls led us to four finalists, one from each book: Jane and Rochester from Jane Eyre, Melanie and Ashley from Gone with the Wind, Dracula and Jonathan from Dracula, and Amy and Laurie from Little Women. Dracula and Jonathan beat out Dracula and Mina, so that was an interesting little bracket. And then we had those four in a poll. Those four choices were the finalist poll. And the winner, the overall winner over social media, was Amy and Laurie from Little Women. The breakdown was that Melanie and Ashley got 33.3% of the vote on Twitter. Dracula and Jonathan in Dracula got 33.3% of the vote on Twitter. And Amy and Laurie from Little Women got 33.3% of the vote from Twitter. But they got 100% of the vote on Facebook. So they win overall. We should probably discuss some of these relationships and then, get our participants' thoughts on them. And then have a vote just amongst ourselves here on the workshop.
Yeah, absolutely. And a note to our other participants, you feel free to unmute yourself and speak up as you see fit, especially as we're kind of parsing out, do we agree with these standings here for best couple? And then after we're done talking about the top four here and where they stand, if you have other thoughts about a couple from those books that you would like to say, oh, I really like this book, yeah, or this couple from these books, feel free to nominate them.
Yeah, I thought it was really interesting that Sarah E. and I, when we do our behind-the-scenes podcast recordings, a lot of these choices weren't really in our top choices. These finalists that we had in this category, some of them were not even, and some of the ones that we really thought would be best in this category didn't even really show up in our poll past the first round. So it is an interesting thing when you reach out and try to get public input.
You know what I would love to know, too, and we don't have time to backtrack and figure this out, but how many of these people formed their opinion of who's a good couple and who isn't from the movie version versus the original book?
Right, and that's so crucial this year, especially because there have been recent film and or TV adaptations of Little Women and Dracula. And then, well, Gone with the Wind is kind of in its own little category of adaptation. There's really only one, the movie. But it's so well known that it's hard to, you know, a lot of people have seen the movie but not actually read the book. And then Jane Eyre has had so many adaptations, I tried to list them in one of our behind-the-scenes when we're prepping, because we're going to talk about adaptations later on in our behind-the-scenes podcast, and I tried to list all the adaptations. I was like, oh my gosh, there's just too many.
Mm-hmm. So, right, yeah, because I'm thinking if I had not read the books, depending on which version, particularly of Jane Eyre, I had seen, there'd be some that I would be so put off by Rochester, and other interpretations that kind of soften those hard edges we mentioned before.
Yeah.
And if I were exposed to that version of Rochester's My Only Version, might be like, perfect couple.
Yeah, exactly. And I think that's very true even of Gone with the Wind. Dracula is in its own, well, I should finish my thought on Gone with the Wind, is that, you know, we have the movie is so large in popular culture, and those romances in the book, the Scarlet and Rhett, Melanie and Ashley, Scarlet and Ashley, they're such big relationships. They're so big on the screen and in the movie that they do kind of characterize the personalities involved, the characters involved, and the relationships quite differently than the actual book version of those characters and relationships. The book is much much more detailed, and you get a lot more information. So. That said, though, I think Dracula is kind of like the odd man out, literally, in our choices this year, in that, you know, it's really hard to think of this supernatural creature, this vampire, as having any kind of functional, healthy relationships. And I was just kind of really surprised that Dracula and Jonathan were in the best functional, healthy relationship category. But hey, you know, they got some votes, you know, so...
But yeah, I'd be very curious. And when we post this, if anyone wants to, you know, leave comments or write in and tell us why you nominated.
Exactly. Yeah, because I know a lot of people can't make the session times and dates, but they have opinions. We've both been getting messages from people about their thoughts on our workshop categories and everything. And I think it would be interesting to find out, hey, if you voted for Dracula and Jonathan as best functional, healthy relationship, please tell us why, you know, and, you know, maybe just with tongue in cheek, maybe it was just kind of like a nod to the fact that, you know, the book really does start with them, you know, and their relationship, and it follows through to the end with that relationship. But Dracula, you know, we'll talk about him in the next session at 2:00 and the dysfunctional relationships, because he's got a lot of them, right?
Why don't we open this up? Participants at home, do you have any comments about our four top contenders being Jane and Rochester, Melanie and Ashley, Dracula and Jonathan, or Amy and Lori? Any comments?
Who were our winners? Mm-hmm. Please comment away. You have to unmute your microphone, though.
And if you don't have any commentary,
that's
okay
too. Yeah, I can see there's the mic.
Sorry, I was trying to unmute.
I know it's hard sometimes, right?
Yeah. Well, as for Amy and Lori, I found the relationship the first couple of times I read the novel to be very implausible.
Oh, really?
because it seemed like it was a relationship that was based on grief.
Mm.
Basically a very quick emotional reaction and a very sudden wedding. At a point when Amy was probably the most vulnerable mm-hmm. in her life.
You're talking about after Beth passed away. And Amy,
right.
Amy was in Europe with right. Aunt March. She was kind of like studying to be an artist and, you know, trying to become an artist. And so she was very far away when her sister died.
Right.
And, right. yeah, I agree that was definitely, she was definitely vulnerable because if for no other reason, their
right.
family was so close-knit and she was so far away.
Right. Yeah. But over time, I've come to see it a little bit differently, not only from personal experience, but just, I guess, as I've matured, the fact that maybe Amy in her grief that brought out certain emotions that had been there persistently for a very long time.
Mm-hmm.
We know that he had a very deep friendship with all four of the girls.
Mm-hmm.
We know there was a certain, I mean, we have that scene where Amy was jealous over the fact that Laurie and Joe were going to the theater
mm-hmm.
and was so jealous that she burned Joe's book.
Mm-hmm. That was at the very beginning of the book when Amy was like
yeah.
12 or 13 years old, yeah.
Right, right. And so we kind of see what I would imagine to be a prepubescent Amy. Mm-hmm. Kind of not exactly fixating on Laurie, but definitely it's almost a sort of hero worship.
Mm-hmm.
And that maybe as she matured, that image of him and that affection for him matured and blossomed into something else. And it took this extreme traumatic event of Beth's death for her to admit that.
Mm-hmm.
And so mm-hmm. I've kind of been going back over the book, trying to figure out if that's implied anywhere in the book. I haven't found anything yet.
I think in the book it's pretty clear that Laurie has been visiting Amy off and on in Europe the entire time
mm-hmm.
she was there.
Yeah.
Letters have been exchanged. And Amy was very aware that Beth was... I don't know how else to say this, but I think Amy and they were all aware that Beth was dying slowly, that she was not
uh-huh.
going to live much longer, and they kept telling Amy not to come home, that Beth
yeah.
wanted her to have that experience in Europe with Aunt March and to stay there and fulfill that part of Amy's destiny is what Beth wanted her to do. And so I think you hit a nail on the head when you said that with grief and with that distance, and the only connection to home that she had was Laurie, and his visits, his letters, and things like that, and because he was also in Europe at the same time. And so I feel like you're right to say that it was grief and vulnerability and maturity that brought the two of them together. I think it was through their shared grief, loneliness, maturity, and isolation from that close-knit family, you know, being away from them, that really helped them bond into a mature relationship and to see each other as grown-ups.
Yep.
Like you were referencing her prepubescent kind of crush on him, mm-hmm. maybe. Or even if she didn't have a crush on him, there was something in Amy as a young child, as that young girl in the beginning of the book, who saw Laurie as something different from her family, coming in and taking the attention away from her in terms of Joe's attention towards her, you know, her family's attention. And so there was always that kind of little bit of friction there. And to have that grow into a nurturing relationship where they sustained each other in a time of sadness and grief, I thought was a really, I'm getting emotional. I thought that was a really beautiful way for their relationship to develop.
Yeah.
So I agree with you, is what I'm saying. Yeah. In my long-winded way.
And really for the full proof that it is a viable and lasting and very true relationship, you have to go into the second and third book to find
yeah.
the explicit proof. So I'm just looking for what's implicit in the novels. And
right.
I've noticed that in the film adaptations, they've had to put in little hints.
Mm-hmm.
Like the scene in the 1994 version, when Beth has scarlet fever and they have to send Amy away, and Laurie in the carriage says, "I promise to kiss you before you die."
Mm-hmm.
And she leans into him and kisses him on the arm.
Yeah.
You know, there's that little hint that there's maybe a little girlhood crush
right.
that could grow later on.
Right.
You know, and they kind of drop hints for it.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I agree. And I think they have an interesting relationship throughout the book, from the time she's a child through to the end. I think it, when they're married, I think it is a interesting relationship. And one thing I will say, Laurie is always pretty darn nice to Amy. And in the first part of the book, she's pretty much a brat. You know, she's not well behaved at all. He's very patient with her, much in the way that a young man would be towards a younger sibling of the girl he liked. He liked Joe, right? That was his first crush.
Yep.
Joe was his crush, and Amy was Joe's little sister, and so he was nice to Amy. But that, you know, he was always pleasant and polite and welcoming and nice to her, Amy, that is. And I thought that, I think that, you know, theirs is a relationship born of friendship, first of all, and grief, second of all. And I think that those two are very powerful emotions that gave them a very solid ground to have their relationship move forward, like you said, into two more novels that Louisa May Alcott wrote that take us into their lives later on when they have a child and everything. So, for those of you who don't know those books, go read them. You know, Joe's Boys and Little Men, yeah. Join us next time as we continue our workshop discussions of the romances and relationships in our four nice books this year. This has been At the Roundtable with Alice
and Sarah E.
of Community Education Arts.
Our nonprofit organization is based in Noblesville, Indiana. You can find us online at cearts.org. We'd like to thank James Weston for writing our intro music and for his technical savvy.
Join us next time
at the Roundtable.